Please be seated. We have a little different format today. We have opportunity to have a split sermon given to us by Mr. Joe Horchek.
Thank you, Joe, and good morning to everybody. Greetings to everybody who's on the webcast with us. And I wanted to just send out a special hello to our newfound friends down in Sierra Vista. We had the opportunity to go down there last week and had just a wonderful afternoon with everybody when we all went to lunch as well. Say hi to Marty. Say hi to Elmira, Beverly, Charlotte, Mark, Kent, and Liz. I got them. See you guys again sometime in the near future, hopefully. Well, I hope you all had a good week and enjoyed this continuing heat. We escaped the heat last week. We left last Sunday morning and didn't get back until Thursday. We went to Southern California and Newport Beach and had a chance to go golfing with some friends of ours and actually got a chance to walk around outside, and the temperature was only like 84 degrees and a nice cool breeze. It was wonderful. Just wonderful. Nice getaway. And we came home to a huge hole in our backyard, thankfully. They dug our pool hole. Sounds sort of weird, doesn't it? Get a lot of rain and I'll have a pit that I can swim in. The crazy thing is about it, they came and they dug the entire pool in one day. They were in and the entire pool was done, shape, everything. By the time we got home Thursday, the majority of the plumbing was already done. It's just astounding how much progress they've made in 5 days. So we're thrilled about that. Well, we've all endured the dog days of summer, haven't we? And we're all praying for and looking forward to cooler weather and some rain and the fall. Talking about enduring, let's turn to Matthew 10 to begin with today. Matthew chapter 10. As we turn to Matthew 10, I'd like to share a story with you. Her name was Wilma. And she was born prematurely on June 23rd, 1940. This produced complications that resulted in her contracting double pneumonia twice in her young life and scarlet fever. But the worst was a bout with polio that left her with a crooked left leg and a foot twisted inward. Metal braces, stares from the neighborhood kids, and 6 years of bus rides to Nashville for treatments could have driven this young girl into a self-made shell. But she refused. Wilma kept dreaming. And she was determined not to allow her disability to get in the way of her dreams. Maybe her determination was generated by the faith of her mother, who often said, "Honey, the most important thing in life is for you to believe it and keep on trying." By age 11, Wilma decided to believe it. And through sheer determination and an indomitable spirit to persevere, regardless, she forced herself to learn how to walk without braces. At age 12, she made a wonderful discovery. Girls could jump and run and play ball just like the boys did. Her older sister, Yvonne, was quite good at basketball, so Wilma decided to challenge her on the court. She began to improve. The two of them ultimately went out for the same school basketball team. Yvonne made the final 12, but Wilma didn't. However, because her father would not allow Yvonne to travel with the team without her sister as a quote-unquote chaperone, Wilma found herself often in the presence of the coach. One day, she built up enough nerve to confront the man with her magnificent obsession, her lifetime dream. She blurted it out. "If you will give me 10 minutes of your time every day, and only 10 minutes, I'll give you a world-class athlete." He took her up on her offer. The result is actually history. Young Wilma finally won a starting position on the basketball squad, and when the season ended, she decided to try out for the track team. What a decision. In her first race, she beat her girlfriend. Then she beat all the girls in her high school, then even every high school girl in the state of Tennessee. Wilma was only 14, but she was already a champion. Shortly thereafter, although still in high school, she was invited to join the Tinkerbell's track team at Tennessee State University. She began a serious training program after school and on weekends. As she improved, she continued winning short dashes and the 440 relay. 2 years later, she was invited to try out for the Olympics. She qualified and ran in the 1956 Games in Melbourne, Australia. She won a bronze medal as her team placed third in the 440 meter relay. It was a bittersweet victory. She had won a medal, but she decided that next time she was going for the gold. Wilma realized that the victory would require an enormous amount of commitment, sacrifice, and discipline. To give her the winner's edge as a world-class athlete, she began to do a do-it-yourself program similar to the one she had employed to get herself out of those leg braces. Not only did she run at 6 and 10 every morning and 3 every afternoon, she would often sneak down the dormitory fire escape from 8 to 10 o'clock and run the track before bedtime. Week after week, month in and month out, Wilma maintained the same grueling schedule for over 1,200 days. Now we're ready for the Rome Olympics in 1960. When the sleek, trim, young black lady, only 21 years old, walked out in the field, she was ready. She had paid the price. Even those 80,000 fans could sense the spirit of victory. It was electrifying. As she began her warm-up sprints, a cadence chant started to begin to emerge from the stands. Wilma, Wilma, Wilma. The entire stadium was chanting. And finally, they were confident. They were as confident as she was that she could win. And win she did. She breezed to an easy victory in the 100-meter dash. Then she won the 200-meter dash. And finally, she anchored the U.S. women's team to another first-place finish in the 400-meter relay. 3 gold medals. She was the first woman in history to ever win 3 gold medals in track and field. I should add that each of the 3 races was won in world record time. And what was the name of this young lady? Wilma Glodion Rudolph. An icon of perseverance and endurance. Like Wilma, many of us have struggled with life and what it's brought our way. Sometimes it's debilitating. Sometimes it's physical. Sometimes it's mental. Sometimes it's even spiritual. It's different for each and every one of us, but we all have something we have to endure or are now enduring. We're going to see that if we can, in fact, endure through it all, there is something special awaiting us. Jesus talked about another form of endurance here in Matthew 10. This is where Christ was sending out the 12 apostles on their first missionary journey. He gave them all kinds of instructions as well as admonitions that had prophetic implications as well, as we're going to see. Let's begin in Matthew 10 and verse 16. Matthew 10, verse 16. Christ said, "Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Therefore be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. But beware of men, for they will deliver you up to councils and scourge you in the synagogues. You will be brought before governors and kings for my sake, as a testimony to them and to the Gentiles. You will be brought, but when they deliver you up, do not worry about how or what you would speak. For it will be given to you in that hour what you should speak. For it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father who speaks in you. Now brother will deliver up brother to death, and a father his child, and children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death." Then the passage that I want to zero in on, verse 22. "And you will be hated by all for my name's sake, but he who endures to the end will be saved." As I mentioned a couple times ago in my messages, one of the biggest challenges that I've faced as a Christian, and I know others have been challenged with it as well, is do we really believe when we read these statements like this from Christ and other apostles, even from God through other means? Do we believe that what Jesus Christ just told us there, if we can endure to the end, we will be saved? Flip over a few pages to Matthew 24. Matthew 24, famous passage of Scripture. Christ says that he who endures will be saved. That's pretty big. That's a pretty big promise. If you will recall, here in Matthew 24, this is where the disciples asked Jesus Christ for the signs of the end and what they would be. He gave them several signs to look for, and then continues with some unnerving instruction. This began in Matthew 24 and verse 8. Matthew 24, verse 8. All these are the beginning of sorrows. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will be offended, will betray one another, and will hate one another. Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will wax cold or grow cold. But he who endures to the end shall be saved. This passage of Scripture that we just read, especially the last two or three verses, sounds like today. Sounds like what this country is going through. Lawlessness is abounding, and the love of many is just disappearing. And that can be really unnerving to us, even though we may not be experiencing it firsthand. We're hearing about it, looking at it, reading about it, getting announcements about it. And for some reason, we just can't get it out of our minds, as Mr. Buchanan mentioned a couple sermons ago. Just we need to start protecting our minds and getting our thinking going down a different path. This term we've seen twice now, endure, is from the Greek word, and the way it's spelled in English is H-U-P-O-M-E-N-O, hupomeno. And it actually can mean to bear trials, have fortitude, to persevere, and to endure and take it patiently. I've always had a hard time with that part. Let's now turn to 1 Corinthians 13. 1 Corinthians 13. This taking it patiently aspect of life is one that I've been challenged with all my life, and it just seems to never go away. It's part of my DNA, I guess, and I just have to keep pushing forward, keep putting one foot in front of the other sometimes. And sometimes that's the only thing we can do. We can become so debilitated by things that are going on in our lives or so down because of what we're dealing with that we get up in the morning and it's like, oh, not another day. But you know what? If we just keep putting one foot in front of the other, force ourselves to get on our knees and pray. I know it doesn't feel the best to do it when you're down. Get your nose into the Bible once in a while. You don't have to do it every single day, but just force yourself to do the things that you know and you've been instructed by God and Jesus Christ and the other apostles that will work. As we heard in a recent sermon, some of this stuff is so dramatic when it happens, it doesn't make any sense. But we need to just keep putting forward, especially when we're having to endure something unpleasant and painful. Paul also addresses this idea of enduring here in 1 Corinthians 13. This is a fascinating chapter of the Bible, one that is not quite understood by many of us. We called it the love chapter because that's truly what it is. But it's a lot more than just most of us understand. We'll look at it again in the context of what can be expected, what we are expected to develop when it comes to loving one another, which Jesus Christ himself is a sign between him and us. Let's pick it up in 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 4. 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 4. Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Now that's a mouthful. Endures all things, endures pain and suffering, endures ridicule, endures false accusations, endures criticism, endures mean-spiritedness, endures wrongful treatment, endures gossiping, rumors, and lies, endures anger and nastiness. Shall I go on? That's a challenge in life, folks. I know it. I know you know it. Paul knew it. Christ knew it. God knows it. I think we get the point. If we've ever experienced any of this, we know how discouraging it can become to us. It can really drag us down. You get to the point that you just want to quit. And if you've ever gotten to that point, don't beat yourself up. Many of us have gotten to that point. It's a natural course of being human. Several instances in the Bible talk about those individuals that got to that point. They just want to quit. Don't want to get up another morning. You're not sinning when that happens. You're living life as a human being. God understands that. Christ understands that. That's one of the reasons why they talked about it so much. It's one of the reasons why God and Christ gave us the Spirit of God to try to help us get through some of this. Let's go to Hebrews 11 next. Hebrews chapter 11. While we turn to Hebrews 11, let me share another very short story with you about Sir Winston Churchill. Before he died, he became renowned for his eloquent speeches and inspiring oratory, especially during World War II in England. Sir Winston Churchill took 3 years getting through eighth grade. I bet most of us didn't know that. Because he had trouble learning English. It seems ironic that many years later, Oxford University asked him to address its commencement exercises. He arrived with his usual props, a cigar, a cane, and a top hat, accompanied Churchill wherever he went. As Churchill approached the podium, the crowd rose in appreciative applause. With unmatched dignity, he settled the crowd and stood confident before his admirers. Removing the cigar and carefully placing the top hat on the podium, Churchill gazed at his waiting audience. Authority rang in Churchill's voice as he shouted, "Never give up!" Several seconds passed before he rose to his toes and repeated, "Never give up!" His words thundered in their ears. There was a deafening silence as Churchill reached for his hat and cigar, steadied himself with his cane, and left the podium. His commencement address was finished. I'm guessing that graduating class from Oxford University never forgot one word of that commencement speech. Never give up. If you will recall, Hebrews 11 has become known as the faith chapter. In the first 31 verses, Paul, I believe, discussed almost every aspect of faith and provided a litany of individuals who were great examples. This included Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, and Rahab the harlot. Let's pick it up in Hebrews 11 and verse 32. Hebrews 11, verse 32. "And what more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets." Then Paul summarizes many aspects of the different types of endurance that our forefathers and other predecessors have had to endure in their life. Scary thoughts when we consider them as we read. Verse 33. "Who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens." This is like a complete summary of all that God's people have had to endure all through history, through their lives. And he's not through yet. He goes on. Verse 35. "Women received their dead raised to life again. Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. Still others had trial of mockings and scourging, jests of chains and imprisonment. Excuse me. They were stoned. They were sawn in two, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains, in dens and caves of the earth. And all these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise. God, having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us. We're going to continue in Hebrews 12, but let me pause here for a moment. They didn't receive the promise. The majority of people that have died already have never received the promise. And there's a special statement that's made here in the last part of verse 40, that they should not be made perfect apart from us. When the resurrection comes, we're all coming up at the same time. The dead first as a preeminent opportunity. They're all going to be given that wonderful, glorious moment of truth at the same time. As we've seen, faithful endurance and perseverance is key to surviving the trials of life. We are no different than our predecessors. And Paul made sure we understood that. It should give us hope to know we're not the only ones suffering. We're not the only ones going through trials. We're not the only ones struggling. The history of God's people is laced with it. Probably one way to look at the troubles that we face today is to compare the issues that we face to the ones we just read. Sort of paled into insignificance for the most part. Yet it's very real, and yet they did endure all that. Let's continue in Hebrews 12 and see Paul's perspective on what we just read, beginning in verse 1. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay every side of weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand at the throne of God. The joy that was set before him was he knew we could make it into God's kingdom if he died. That brought joy to Jesus Christ. Verse 3, for consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. Take hope, in other words. Take faith in knowing and understanding. Just putting one foot in front of the other sometimes is about all we can do. And that's okay. As long as we just keep moving forward somehow. We can't let these aspects of life get to us and make us weary, discouraged, and just want to quit. As Winston Churchill said, never give up. As we get ready to close, let's go to 2 Timothy 4. 2 Timothy chapter 4. Once again, we'll let Paul give us some advice about how to continue in our Christian walk as we move forward. This is Paul's last admonition to young Timothy before his own death and the parting from his hard-fought ministry. But before we go to 2 Timothy 4, I want to share one more story with you today. This comes from the magazine Runner's World from August of 1991. We're told the story of Beth Ann DeGiantis and her attempt to qualify for the 1992 Olympic Trials Marathon. A female runner must complete the 26-mile, 380-yard race in less than 2 hours and 45 minutes in order to compete in the Olympic Trials. That's just to qualify. Beth started strong but began having trouble around mile 23. She's well into the race. She reached the final straightaway at 2 hours and 43 minutes, just 2 minutes left to qualify. 200 yards from the finish, she stumbled and fell. Dazed, she stayed down for 20 seconds. The crowd yelled, "Get up! Get up!" The clock was ticking. Now it was 2 hours and 44 minutes, less than a minute to go. Beth Ann staggered to her feet and began walking. 5 yards short of the finish, with 10 seconds to go, she fell again. She began to crawl. The crowd was cheering her on. Go, Beth, go. She crossed the finish line on her hands and knees. Her time? 2 hours, 44 minutes, and 57 seconds. She had 3 seconds to spare. We, too, are in a struggle to run our race, and sometimes we fall. All we have to do is just get back up. And if we fall again, crawl if we have to. It's okay. It's okay to modify our approach to things, just to keep moving forward. It's a marathon of trials and effort. But we have the promise and the support of Jesus Christ, our Lord and finisher of faith, that we're going to make it. Let's finally look at 2 Timothy 4 and begin in verse 1. 2 Timothy 4, verse 1. Paul writes, I charge you, therefore, before God and the Lord Jesus Christ, who will judge the living and the dead at his appearing and his kingdom. Preach the word. Be ready in season and out of season. Convince, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and teaching. Then he gives us a warning. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but according to their own desires, because they have itching ears, they will heap up for themselves new teachers. And they will turn their ears away from the truth and be turned aside to fables. Paul knew what was coming to Timothy in his ministry. He's also warning us of what is to come in the future that we will face as well. Then a final warning and words of encouragement, verse 5. But you, be watchful in all things. Endure afflictions. Do the work of an evangelist. Fulfill your ministry. For I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure is at hand. Paul knew his life was about over, and he wanted to leave Timothy and all of us with some final words of hope. Verse 7. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give me on that day. And not only me, but also to all who have loved his appearing. All of us. It applies to every single human that has ever lived on this earth, eventually. Brethren, Paul has told us that enduring to the end and never giving up is what life is all about. Jesus Christ talked about it. No matter what we face, how challenging or how discouraging it is at any moment, we must not quit or ever give up. As Sir Winston Churchill put it so eloquently, never give up. Have a great Sabbath.